We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,505 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Marty Foster again for the week and the long lost Vince. Vince, we'll start with you since it's been a minute. How are you?
Very well, Johnny. Thank you very much.
It's good to see you back. And we will be talking more in the coming days and weeks, I'm sure. And I'm looking forward to that. And I hope the listeners are looking forward to that as well.
Me too.
Marty, how are you?
I'm fair dinkum, no whuckers, as they say in Australia. And I've got to make a quick apology. If I didn't lose him by giving him the wrong name when I said to the guy from Markula, the only hairdresser in Markula, that his name was Barry, it's not, it's Neil. Sorry, Neil, my apologies. For some reason, I had the name Barry in my head. And immediately I'd finished the podcast, I realized that I had misnamed you. Not as bad as misgendering, but it's still bad. Sorry, mate.
I'm sure he cordially accepts your apology. Vince, happy belated birthday to you.
Oh, thank you very much indeed.
Yeah, you're going, but you're 40 now, right? Is that it?
60.
You don't look a day over 40. And
thank you very much.
The birthday feast that you had prepared that Marty was so kindly able to show me from the picture was looked lovely.
So that's a local delicacy. They call it lechon, which is a whole pig that's then spit roasted over barbecue coals. And depending on the ferocity of the fire, can take anything up to like 12 hours to cook.
Mm. I'll bet it was lovely.
It is delicious. And the crackling is, they actually finish cooking it, put it on a big wooden board, tie it up and bring it over. And it's still hot because they do it less than a mile away. And it's still hot when it arrives at the house.
Yeah, fantastic. That looked absolutely lovely. The only thing that was missing was this symbolic apple in its mouth. I think that was the only thing that was missing.
I don't know.
Don't do that.
Do they have apple trees in the Philippines?
I have an apple tree in my garden.
Oh, nice. Because
they're more of a kind of a crab apple, though. That's any.
Well, the thing is.
Quite bitter. Yeah, they're quite bitter.
If you can get them past, like immigration and border control, if you got some sweet eating apple shoots, sort of twigs, I could teach you how to graft that onto a crab apple trunk. And obviously, the branches that would grow would have sweet apples on. But then again, we're all getting on a bit now, so you probably wouldn't get to eat them. But they do say that it's a proper act of generosity.
Yes, to plant a tree that you will not be able to sit in the shade of.
That's it, you see. But to graft apple branches onto a tree that you won't get to taste.
Yeah.
So I was amazed, not amazed, because I know that these things exist elsewhere, but the back garden of the lady we stayed within Australia had mango trees, satsuma trees or mandarin trees, an orange tree, lemon trees. And I'm not jealous, but I would quite like those kind of fruits growing in my garden. But unfortunately, it's too freaking cold.
We have a huge mango tree. I'm pointing because you can't see, but a huge mango tree at the back of our house, just outside the land belongs to somebody else, but they don't look after it. They're not building on it. It's just land they own. There's a huge mango tree.
Yeah.
That, people just walk up and take take stuff off.
I'd be
and the
one
kids,
of them.
Our apple tree hangs over the fence, so the kids are up on the wall shaking the tree trying to get the apples.
Yeah, because if it falls on your side of the fence, it's yours. So
yeah, I do.
Yeah. shall we begin with something constructive today? We have been going on for what, a half an hour, 45 minutes in prep.
Yeah,
doing everything, yeah, yeah. getting all the house cleaning out of the way. But shall we start with the horses? Do you want to explain what in the world is going on here, Marty? Because this
I've never seen it quite that bad. I mean, yes, horses are animals and they don't necessarily do what you expect them to do all the time. And these kind of highly strung chargers, bearing in mind that they're all sort of 16 and a half hands, so they're big, big animals, can throw their riders. And all I can say is somebody spooking the horses somehow. Maybe some kind of sneaky bastard is creeping up to Horse Guards Parade with some kind of noisemaker that messes with equine ears. But yeah, for it to happen so much within a couple of days, there's something wrong somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've never seen horses go galloping just crazily down through the middle of central London. That's a new one on me.
I think so. Yeah. I saw a rider get thrown. I think it was part of the Queen's birthday parade many, many years ago, but that was spooked by something in the crowd. It went up, the rider fell off, but the horse didn't race off like these ones are. So yeah, it's strange that they would react that way and haven't done so in the past.
You've got to realize that the person who sat on the back of that horse while they're on ceremonial duties, trains with that horse, looks after that horse, does all the stable work, including manually evacuating their bowels prior to a parade. So those horses shouldn't spook because they've had the person who sits on their back and right up their rectum with a big rubber glove on. So it's part of army life, perhaps, that most people don't realize goes on. But if you're going to have a parade with lots of horses, the last thing you want is London streets and Horse Guards Parade becoming a massive manure factory. So they do that in the stables before they go out on parade.
Yeah. Well, Marty, you said that you wanted to get into a knockdown drag out today, possibly a fist fight. So I'm all ears. What do we have?
Well, no, it's just the religion. It's about religion.
Religion again.
Religion. Definitely religion. The way you and the lovely Melissa were talking, you described it as being one of the pillars of society. And you were also saying that this neo-mysticism, according to some sources, one of which being Wikipedia, which you can believe or not, as being part of the far right movement.
Well, let me clarify. It's my view that, and I was not associating it with the far right. And I'm not recollecting it at the moment. Maybe she did, and I missed it. But my whole thing is, I'm seeing a move away from the traditional foundations that we have in the West of Christianity, and I'm seeing a resurgence of a type of a pagan movement, and I'm seeing a lot more people latch onto it. That was the only point I was trying to make, and I don't understand why that's happening.
I'm kind of glad it's happening to a certain extent, because the main Christian denominations, so Catholicism and, you know, Anglican, that's it, yeah. They're control mechanisms. You're welcome. Thank you. They're control mechanisms. They're a way of stopping the poor from killing the rich. They always have been. The Catholic religion was the way in which the Romans expanded their empire. They couldn't afford the big army to keep everybody in control. So instead, they gave them Catholic guilt. You know, if you do something against your lords and your rightful lords and masters, you are going to burn in hell. They've always been that. And yes, they have become a pillar of modern society, but only in as much as they provide a moral code to live by. So if people can have a moral code without being part of a formal religion, to my mind, that is a much better way to live and exist. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. The moment you say the way I pray is better than the way you pray, you are an arsehat.
You're just saying that my cult is better than your cult.
Yeah, my imaginary friend is bigger than your imaginary friend.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not an atheist. I have strong beliefs, but they no longer relate to the doctrine and credo of either the Catholic Church or the Anglican Church. They are mine and mine alone. And to my mind, this is what the neo-mysticism is actually all about. It's people finding their own way. They still want to believe in something, but they don't want to be part of something that is corrupt, full of paedophiles, a control mechanism, those kind of things. They don't want to be part of formal religion, but they still want to, you know, observe things, make observances in their own way. When you look at formal religion and they all get together on a Sunday or a Saturday or a Friday, depending on which book of the Abrahamic religions they follow, it's a focusing of thought energy. That's what it is. They're all praying for whatever they're being told to pray for at the same time, and they're doing it en masse within countries, within continents, and so on. Even the pagan religions, and you mentioned in your conversation with Melissa Wicca, the first thing that every coven does is a thing called raising the watchtowers. And it's done at the same time, on the same day, across the the time zone, and it focuses all those coven members' thought energy in one direction, and it's exactly the same thing. So whether you pray in a Catholic church or an Anglican church or in a coven, you're still praying, and it's still a focus of thought energy, and it should be for the betterment of the entire world, not just for your little gang.
You know, I've always made the argument, and kind of going back to your not being part of the institutions that are corrupt and full of pedophiles. I've always made the argument that since I was about 18 years old, that since I was able to leave because I wasn't under parental supervision any longer, I've made the argument that I've not lost faith in the faith. I've lost faith in the institution that's supposed to safeguard that faith.
And I think that's a very good way of putting it. And I think an awful lot of people have.
Yeah.
They've lost the faith in those institutions. And as a result, if they haven't had a moral code to live by instilled in them from something else, or carried on their moral code instilled in them by whatever church it was, that's where things have started to fall apart. And that's what we're seeing. So I agree that society is being undermined, and these pillars of society, such as your country, your faith, are actually being taken away from people. If you have a moral code to live by, you've got at least one part of the roof still standing.
I think you could draw some comparisons with marriage as well. A lot less people are getting married now, but many of them are still living by a code of monogamy.
Having children,
supporting children, having the nuclear family, but not having to have that one piece of paper.
I think the Swedish follow that mostly, don't they? They do. They're not big on marriage in Sweden, but they love to have larger families.
I think Iceland
that too, yeah.
Had a set. So the Scandinavian countries, pagan religions, quite often, rather than marriage, they'll have, not saying that Sweden and Iceland are pagan, but they'd have a thing called a hand fasting, which lasts for a year and a day. And so on the anniversary of your hand fasting, or the day before, if you want to stay together, your priest, your druid, your top witch or whatever will conduct another hand fasting, and it goes on like that. And it does take there's that other well-known phrase, it takes a village to raise a child. So those villages are made up of couples. So they've got their support network, the parents, the grandparents, the aunties, the uncles, and so on. So if those kind of villages, inverted commas, are still in existence, then the youth that we're raising today should be getting the right moral guidance And again, that has nothing with a formal religion.
It's interesting, though, because here in the Philippines, where there is very strong Catholic belief system, that it takes a village is still very prominent here. This place reminds me so much of the Rhondda Valleys when I grew up as a, you know, some 9, 10, 11 years old. I think the first time it kind of struck me was our son had been born. So we're talking 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and he was like one or two. And I remember saying to my wife one day, oh, where's? And she said, oh, he's out. And I said, who's he out with? She went, I don't know. He's just gone. So like, because someone had come around, picked him up, took him away. And then he came back later on that afternoon, having been whisked away in a moped somewhere, played with some kids. And then a few weeks later, unbeknown to me, there was more people in the house than would normally be in the house. And it was just that we do this. I've got to go here. So will you look after the kids? And that kind of, as it was in the Rhondda Valleys.
And where I grew up in rural Norfolk, it was the same. You know, in the Philippines, you're calling everyone Kuya or Ate, as in brother or sister, and no blood relation, but there's that kind of familiar
societal cohesion.
Yeah.
And it's respect as well, because if someone is older than you, regardless of whether they are really your older brother or sister, you offer them that respect because they are older than you and by default have better understanding of the world. So may well know more than you or better than you.
Which is why the honorific, I believe, is Po. But I realized that I was being a bit rude because now I'm much older. So while I was in Abu Dhabi and indeed in Australia, whenever I bumped into a Kabayan, normally a younger lady serving or whatever, and I started to say Salamat Ate, and then I corrected myself with Salamat Bunso, meaning younger sister, just because I'm old and decrepit. But anyway, moving on.
We were originally talking about religion, then we got into the family and everything else. But I suppose we should go, and I stepped away there for a second because there were a whole squadron of Chinooks flying over my house about 500 meters off the deck. So that was my house.
Yours
was
or ours?
Ours. I guess they're ours now, aren't they?
Well,
Well, they're about to be because Mr. Sunak announced yesterday that the UK said they're launching a new campaign for NATO for increasing their baseline spending for all members to increase to 2% to 2.5% from now until the end of next year. And it is set to possibly increase after that. And they also announced that.
Labour will just reverse that decision as soon as Labour gets in. It's one of those things that Sunak, who is unelected, let's remember he got there because of other people resigning the office, and he was never formally elected. The country is totally pissed off with the Conservatives. They haven't liked a single thing they've done, and I don't like a single thing they've done for a totally different reason. That reason being, I can see through everything that they're doing. Once you see the matrix and you know what's going on, you can see that all of this is for show. And when Labour take over, that decision will most likely be reversed.
When Labour take over, it's probably going to get even worse. But until it is worse and people can then realize that, they're not gonna vote. If the Tories got voted in again, they just carry on with the same old crap. They need to get a kick up the arse and get kicked out of office and then have to work and actually do some research to find out what the people want before they can get reelected. But it may be two terms.
But you know? Wasn't that the whole premise with Boris Johnson and getting out of the EU? Was to give a majority government, that way you wouldn't need a coalition and they could get all of this stuff done, and then COVID happened and everything fell apart.
So Boris Johnson got the biggest majority, I think, since Thatcher. So pretty much anything he said, he could have got through. He started down the right path of putting Brexit right. And I may be wrong, but when he left his wife and took up with the blonde, I forget, is her name Penny?
What's her name? Is it Carrie something?
There's been so many. How are we supposed to keep track?
I don't know. He's on like his ninth or tenth wife, I think.
she seemed to have some control over him, and he started to go down the net zero green path and started to focus on that and ignore Brexit. And that's when it all started to unravel, in my humble opinion. Not that I'm blaming her. I'm blaming him for not being stronger.
Oh, but you look at, I'm sure we did a bit of a dive into her backstory a while ago. And hasn't she got World Economic Forum links as well?
Probably. She does. And she's also a, well, going back to your religion thing, she's also a member of a witch's coven or something. I did see that.
Carrie Johnson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay. Anyway, I think, Vince, you're onto something. I think that people are going to get a kick because it's going to get far worse under Labour. Because if you look at Keir Starmer, you know, the way he was working that heavy bag that I showed you that one day, I don't see defense when it comes to that guy.
No,
because he's the sort of wuss that's always relied on somebody else to defend him.
Did you say wuss? I haven't heard that word since the 90s.
I was going to say something worse, but I don't want to wear out the bleep button.
You haven't used it yet since you've been back from Australia, so.
Give me a chance. It's early yet. No, he's the sort of person that's always relied on the establishment to protect him, whether that be the police force or, you know, the law protects him. He's a lawyer. He's a barrister. That's what he did for a living before he decided to fake it till he makes it as a politician.
He's not going to be any better than Corbyn would have been if Corbyn was president. It's just that he's a little bit more palatable. So people will probably vote for him. Labour will come back to him as opposed to not wanting to vote for Corbyn. But I think he's going to be just as destructive as a prime minister.
I apologise in advance, but you accidentally said president, not prime minister.
it's because he takes an interest in US politics and not British politics.
Yeah. I do. I pay far more attention to American politics than UK politics.
And there's good reason for that, because anything that happens in America happens here with alarming speed, you know. So you might as well look at the source of whatever change is coming our way first, because it gives you a bit of a heads up.
I think the only thing that you're looking at as far as change would be a change in ice cream flavors, wouldn't it be?
I'm going to sidetrack here. The ice cream and gelato in Sydney, especially down Bondi Beach, was absolutely fantastic.
Have you been to Australia lately? I didn't know that. You haven't mentioned it.
Have I not mentioned it? No. Well, I'm not vegan, so I can't mention that every 5 minutes.
You're starting to remind me of who was that guy that was to go from John Whiteley, Maguire.
Steve Maguire, yeah.
Steve Maguire. We used to laugh about it. We used to say, when someone meets him, set your stopwatch to see how long he can bring into the conversation. He's got an MBA.
He was actually, not a lot of people got on with him. Me being a social chameleon, I did, but his predecessor, he was also a Steve. I was so annoyed with him that when Maguire came onto the scene, it was a breath of fresh air to me. But I had to persuade him to do something for himself, because he was all study, 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 and work, work. So I persuaded him to take up the guitar.
Is that when he was the guy in charge of the TDS?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In that little room at the back, yeah.
Yeah.
He was knuckling down doing the last year of his MBA in the Open University, yeah.
That's right. But the other, you could set your watch by it as to when he would mention it. And I apologise if I mentioned Australia, but yeah. You mentioned ice cream, and that's what led me there. Sorry, Johnny. Let's get back on track.
Yeah, let's get back on track. Let's go, it's ice cream, and I mean, you like to eat ice cream in hot climate, correct?
I'll eat ice cream whenever.
Yeah, the ice cream truck drove by in the middle of December, and you went out to get an ice, or somebody brought you an ice cream while we were podcasting, actually.
That is also true, yes.
Yeah. Well, let's look at what could possibly happen in the U.S. that would resonate across the pond. As you said, it wouldn't take very long.
No. The White House telling Fox Business it's now considering declaring a national climate emergency. But that's a climate crisis to you, Mark. The AP, which sets the standards for newsrooms across the country, they're urging Americans to use the term climate crisis to address the current situation. This is all troubling, but if the president declares a climate emergency, what impact does that have?
Well, I mean, this is the serious story of the today. NBC News has reported that if Joe Biden declares a national climate emergency, he would have COVID-like powers under that emergency. And they also compared the emergency powers to the 9/11 emergency powers. The Center for Biological Diversity has estimated Joe Biden would get about 130 wartime-like powers by which to bypass democracy and impose the Green New Deal on America without a single vote of Congress. This is truly the this should be a Halloween story, not a story for Earth Day. This is a truly frightening story, and he might just be desperate enough to do it. This is being widely reported in the media. The Biden White House is leaking this out. This might happen, and this is going to give Joe Biden these kind of, you want to say the word, dictatorial powers. He doesn't need no stinking democracy to impose the Green New Deal if he does this.
I think, if I remember rightly, it was either the fourth or sixth podcast that we ever did that we discussed the Green New Deal.
Yes.
It was really early on, wasn't it?
It was really early, yeah. Because we got to look at it and we're like, this has nothing to do with climate. This is about implementing like socialism.
Well, yeah. Exactly. So likewise with the 17 Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations. It is designed to, here's a beep, f*** us up. And that's what is likely to happen if he does declare it as an emergency and he gets those 131 extra powers. People still don't realize that it's mostly a lie. It's hidden. It's a lie hidden between two bits of truth. Yes, we are possibly, you know, emitting too many harmful toxins into the atmosphere, but it's in the list of countries that are doing that. Of the top 11, China is number one.
No, America's number one.
No, America's number two, I believe.
India.
India's right up there. But, you know, the countries that need to make these changes, if it's going to have any kind of global effect, which I don't really think it will, but if it's going to have any kind of global effect, it's all the big hitters that need to do something. Pissant countries like the United Kingdom, of which I'm very proud, or used to be, we can make no perceptible difference to this global climatic effect that all these emissions are making. It has to be the United States, it has to be China, and it has to be India and Russia, of course. Russia's right up there as well.
They are.
But at the end of the day, we are going to have to suffer and debilitate ourselves to meet these net zero targets. And all it does is advantages the countries that are paying no attention to reducing their emissions and disadvantages the countries, the smaller countries that are. All industry is planned to disappear from Northern Europe and be elsewhere.
I have to push back a little. And the reason I have to push back a little is because of what I found that was written in New Lies for Old in 1984, talking about how this was part of a long range policy that was coming out of what was then the time, the Soviet Union. And it was strictly policy that was fed to us by change agents sent to our academia for the purposes of long-term destabilization to sabotage us defensively, militarily, and economically.
As I say, it's a shit sandwich. So two bits of bread with a dirty, shitty lie right in the middle of it. And it's that lie that is continuing to gather momentum and make your average person on the street, because of the news narrative that they're being fed, believe that, oh, we're all going to be dead in 5-6 years unless everyone stops using energy right now. So that's the problem that we have, that it is a lie. And whoever's, you know, keeping that lie going, whether it is the long-range Soviet plan or whether it's just the globalists who've already got their money invested in Asia, Africa, and South America, so that the industries can move away from where they're done best in Northern Europe and the United States into other countries where the labor is so much cheaper. Bearing in mind that, of course, the move to automate a lot of that labor is also happening. I just can't believe that people are that naive that they don't see right through those 17 Sustainable Development Goals and this whole climate message.
I have to apologize. You were right. It's China at the top, then America, then India. I remember watching one of those hidden camera gotchas of someone talking to a CNN report or CNN columnist, who the guy said to him, what's the next big thing after Trump is out of office? And the guy said, well, now the COVID's fading away and Trump isn't quite ready to start his presidential run, the next big thing is going to be climate change. This is a CNN guy. And the person who was having the, I can't remember what the name of the organization is, it'll come to me in a minute, said, why is that? He said, because it's a way to control the people. If you keep them scared about something, we can push the narrative and we can get them. He said, we did it with COVID. We did it with Trump. Now they're kind of gone. The next big thing is going to be climate change. We're going to start pushing that in a big way because we're going to try to instill panic. And then by doing that, we can then control the population.
And you can see that narrative being pushed by all news outlets, by all media. Mm-hmm. Every time here in the UK that we get a chance of a little bit of fine weather, you get these fire red and orange coloured maps saying, you know, you're in for a scorcher, temperatures to soar, so on and so forth. Finally, after much, when GB News, which is supposed to be an alternative news source, they were doing this as well. They were doing this with these fiery red maps. And when you look at the comments in social media underneath, thousands of people were saying, what the hell are you doing? Why are you promoting fear? Why are you doing this? It's summer. It's spring. This is what happens. And they've now started to tone down their weather reporting to something a bit more acceptable. They've finally got the message. And I wish more politicians would pay attention to either X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, Facebook, all of the other social medias, because if they actually read the comments that are coming under things that they've put out, they would soon realise that there are enough people around that can see straight through their bullshit, and they might test and adjust and come up with an actual good policy for a change. But that's unlikely because we all know they're being driven by the globalist agenda and the policies coming out of the deep state in the US and the World Economic Forum and so on. So it's encouraging that I've seen an actual change in the way things have been reported about climate, but I don't hold out any long-term hope for it stopping anytime soon.
It's part of that you'll own nothing and you will be happy.
Because you know, if for you to own something, then it's got to be manufactured, produced, energy has to be used.
It used to make me giggle the way that the World Economic Forum would get together and have massive debates about global warming when every single one of them flew in on their own private jet.
Yeah, we've got photographs of all the private jets at the airport just outside Davos, including Thunberg. She flew in on a private jet. You know, she made a big thing about traveling somewhere by sail to get to another meeting, convention or whatever. But when it came to Davos, obviously you can't sail all the way to Switzerland. So yeah,
was it the French politician that took a private jet to a certain place, then took a motorcade to just around the corner, and then got on a bike and rode from around the corner so they could arrive at the conference on a bike?
I don't know if they were French or perhaps Dutch or something, but I can't remember.
Yeah, but people see through it now. That's the problem with now that X is not the echo chamber that it used to be, and you can pretty much say anything you want without being banned or shadow banned, people are seeing the truth.
Yeah. And does that mean that that I've been unfair to the very rich South African in the past? I've forgotten his name for a moment. What's
Elon
his
Musk.
Name?
He's the richest African American in the US. So I don't hear the saying anything about that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's an African American, isn't he? Of course he is. Have I been unfair to him in the past? I don't know yet. I still don't know. But
you're on X, Martin.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of friends who are, one in particular who's definitely a Democrat but will never say it, who constantly messages me about what Elon Musk is doing wrong. And when I say to him, but, you know, and talks about hate crimes and hate speech going up on X since he took over. And I said, but I'm on X and I've looked for you. I can't find you. So, well, I'm not going to be on that on that crap place. I said, well, how can you comment on it if you're not even there? If you weren't there when Jack Dorsey was in charge, you don't know what it started off like. You don't know what it's like now. So you all you're doing is you're just echoing what they say on CNN. And if you watch Elon Musk when he does his interviews with the BBC and they say to him, or the latest one with Don Lemon, which was hilarious, where he says to him, hate speech has increased by 20%. And Elon Musk says, just give me one example. And no one can do it.
No, of
because they're just, they're just banging on about nothing that's true.
But also, hate speech is useful. If I meet someone and through work or some other social situation, if they tell me what they think of me and it's not very nice, I know how to deal with that person moving on. Mm. But if everything is kept too close to the chest, you don't, you won't be aware of when that knife is heading towards your back.
Yeah.
Speak as you find. Say exactly what you want to say. It reveals more about yourself, and people know how to treat you and deal with you. I'd much rather if someone didn't like me, they told me to my face. That way I can act accordingly. Whereas if it's all kept internalized, no one knows where they stand. And the difficult conversations can't be had. And you know, these definitions of what constitutes hate speech are becoming more and more...
They're so fluid, you can't... Anything could be hate speech because I perceive it as being hateful.
These new laws that they're passing, for example, Scotland just passed one. Just about everything you say or you could possibly say or just be accused of that you didn't actually do is now considered to be a hate speech, a crime of hate speech.
Yeah, and I'm not for a moment, you know, giving any kind of praise to Vladimir Putin, but in the period from 2022 to 2023 in Russia, 330 people were arrested for things they'd said online, those things probably being anti-Putin. In the UK, during the same period, about 3,300 people were arrested, investigated, some of which were prosecuted for things they had said online. And whatever happened to sticks and stones may break my bones, you know.
I was just about to say that, yeah.
Well, we ended up with and the woke generation. That's what happened to us.
Yeah, what other people think of me is none of my business. So it's easy just to ignore it and carry on. But unfortunately, people are so thin-skinned nowadays, they get all arsy about it. They all think that their safe space should be accepted without question, and their safe space can be anywhere they wanted to be. Well, that's not the way life works.
I was at a formal dinner on Tuesday night.
Where? In the UK?
In the UK, yeah.
Okay. Not in Australia?
Not in Australia, no. And this guy was sat on the left-hand side of my good friend, and on the right-hand side is another good friend. And so the chap who was left suddenly started talking about Chinese people and said, oh, well, yeah, the Chinese, the ones that come over to the UK, they're bad people because the Chinese Communist Party wouldn't let just anyone travel. And I started to cringe a bit because on the right side is indeed Chinese. In fact, Hong Kong Chinese. But this geezer on the other side was so short that he hadn't even noticed that there was a Chinaman, just one person away from him. And so I tried to change the subject. Even though I agreed with what this casual racist was saying, I had to try and make sure that my friend who'd travelled a long way to come to this dinner didn't get upset by it. And in fact, they were round earlier on this morning, Ed and his good lady, and I talked with them about it, and we had a laugh, and it was all fine. But as I said the other day, when I was talking about Australia, I find I'm more and more having to censor myself so that I am not upsetting people, because people, as you say, quite rightly, have become so thin-skinned. I mean, my feelings get hurt as well. You know, that happens. But I deal with that myself. I don't go running to the legal system and start some lawfare on something because someone said something nasty about me. I deal with it myself. I either have a discussion with the individual and see what, you know, if there's anything that can be done, or I'll knock them out, one or the other. So
yes, of course. We are going to have to wrap up. We're going to have to end a few minutes early, but it has been an absolute pleasure, gentlemen. Vince, it's been great having you back. I think you and I are going to set up something for next week. And I would like to discuss, well, of course, we can talk about anything, you know, weave the politics into everything, of course. But I really wanted to have the discussion with you about, of course, the health and wellness stuff and longevity and and all the stuff that you are involved with. And I'm really interested in talking about that stuff. And hopefully Marty will be over there listening to it with his notepad, taking notes as to what needs to be done to look after his own health.
I've already subscribed to his YouTube channel.
Well,
yeah. So that pops up quite regularly.
And speaking of which, Vince, would you like to tell listeners about your YouTube channel? Of course, you'd be able to plug it every time you're on, but
yeah, so they want to check me out. It's My Longevity Experiment.
My Longevity Experiment.
Yes, which I'm now 5 years into as of my 60th birthday, which was the Monday just gone.
Which was actually your 50th, right? Because your chronological age is 60, but your biological age is 50. Is that right?
The last time we spoke, I was 9 years younger. The last blood test I took, which it's amazing how food and lifestyle affect it, because we've got two or three birthdays in November, which have to be celebrated. Then we've got Christmas in the new year. My blood test was in January, and my biological age went from 9 years younger to 5 years younger. So I lost 4 years in that 3 month period because my triglyceride levels went up and things like that. So I'm back on the straight and narrow. So hopefully in another 6 weeks time when I get the blood test, I'll be back to more than 10 years younger.
Fingers crossed. I hope it works for you.
Fingers crossed.
Marty, any final words?
No, I'd just like to reiterate to the listeners that I've known Vince for quite some time, and he does actually look younger than the day when I first met him, which is quite amazing. And so it's obviously working. He's a couple of years older than me, and I look at least 10 years older than him. So that really sucks. But like I say, subscribe to the YouTube channel. There's a lot of really useful information there. And, you know, give it a go. That's all I can say. Thank you very much.
Right. Marty, we will see you next week, as well as Vince. We'll see you next week as well. I'd like to thank you both for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone, and have a great evening.